I welcome Tom Joslin, Senior Fellow for the Foundation of the Defense of Democracies, to help me understand the various reports we're getting from Afghanistan and Africa about the activities of the jihadists and the response of the geopolitical powers. I'm thinking of not only the United States, but also members of the European Union, sometimes members of NATO, all looking for a way of dealing with what you'd say is the new Taliban, in that it is demanding money, it is seeking partners with adversaries such as China and other bad actors, and the reports. Tom, a very good morning to you. I read from the BBC reporting in these last days. The U.S. and a host of allied countries have called on the Taliban to end the targeted killings of former members of Afghan security forces. In a joint statement, 22 nations demanded that the Islamist regime respect its pledge not to harm former government or security personnel. The statement went on to say, "We are deeply concerned by reports of summary killings and enforced disappearances." This report is released by Human Rights Watch. Tom, the question here is, what is surprising about this? Who is surprised by this? We know that the Taliban is Murder Incorporated. It's practiced that for 20 years. We also know that we anticipated there would be revenge killings. There are more things being reported, but this seems to be centerpiece right now of the protest. To your knowledge, Tom, what are we looking at here? Are we looking at a large-scale campaign? Are we looking at revenge killings within families? Is there any good information coming?
Well, you know, John, I think it's important to put this in context. You remember that throughout the years of diplomacy between the U.S. and the Taliban, the U.S. and the now deposed Afghan government begged the Taliban for a ceasefire many, many times, over and over again. And the Taliban refused to do so, refused to even have any kind of meaningful ceasefire whatsoever. And their reasoning was that the Afghan government was merely a puppet of the U.S. They were infidels and apostates, and they needed to be defeated. I don't think anyone should be surprised that an organization that has that attitude toward the former Afghan government would continue with their agenda of forced disappearances, assassinations, murders, and the like. I mean, I think this is all entirely unsurprising, in other words. And so the fact that the international community is sort of expressing surprise in any regard, or that implying or arguing that the Taliban has somehow reneged on its promise not to do this, well, I think that's kind of foolish. I mean, this is what the Taliban's been all about all along.
Yes, the Taliban is described variously as an Islamist regime. We used to refer to it as gangsters, as exploiters of people's dignity and now their lives, because we have this additional report from the New York Times that goes in tandem with the suspect revenge killings or harms. Quoting, just as during past changes in government, distributing property to Taliban disciples in swaths of rural farmland and in desirable urban neighborhoods has turned into at least a short-term recourse to keep stability within the Taliban ranks. Who has the guns gets the land, said Patricia Gosman, the Associate Asia Director for Human Rights Watch. It's an old, long-continuing story. Tom, the sense that I get from reading these reports is this is the Taliban we knew of. This is the Taliban you and Bill and your colleagues have been reporting on for 20 years. This is not a government. This is ungoverned space in the hands of anarchists, gangsters, and thieves. In this instance, they're not only taking lives, they're taking land. To your reporting at the Long War Journal, was there any doubt in the minds of either the Trump administration negotiating with the Taliban or the Biden administration negotiating with the Taliban that this is where we were headed? Did people introduce the possibility that the Taliban had changed and therefore these worries were not appropriate?
Well, I mean, I think the State Department across administrations has certainly trafficked in really just nonsense about the Taliban. There was all sorts of attempts to portray the Taliban as a new Taliban, and they made all sorts of excuses for its bad behavior. One of the talking points was that they, because they'd want international legitimacy and they're going to want international aid, they wouldn't do all the things you just talked about, all the things that are now being documented as they're doing. And, you know, part of my frustration in covering this for so long, John, is that part of what I realize is sort of the dysfunction of Washington is that there's no accountability for people who get it wrong. So basically, there are officials who vouch for the Taliban's counterterrorism insurances, vouch for the Taliban as a government, you know, as being somewhat responsible as a government and in various other ways. And even though there was no good reason to believe in those assurances at the time, and there was plenty of contradictory evidence that those people were ignoring, in a sense, or downplaying, as these stories come to light now, as more and more evidence accumulates that all that was a fiction all along, there won't be any accountability for the people that sold that bill of goods. And I'm thinking of, you know, for example, Zalmay Khalilzad, who's still making the media rounds, John. This is the guy who sold out the government in Kabul to the Taliban and is still making excuses for the Taliban on national TV and in various media appearances. I mean, this is a guy who should be recognized widely now for what he is, as at a minimum, an abject failure, and that his entire diplomatic scheme was a failure. And yet somehow he still has some credibility or is treated as somehow an expert on these things when really he just failed.
In April, when the president announced the decision to leave by September 11th, that was the headline in April. Was there evidence of either the State Department or the DOD or some element of NATO? NATO was involved. ISAF was involved. Writing a counterpoint. Oftentimes, these studies include a wide range of opinions about what the future held if and when this happened. Did you see dissent, Tom, in any of those large organizations?
You know, I think the dissent was mainly private, John, and nobody had the guts to stand up for their dissent. So part of what Bill Roggio, my colleague, and I have talked about for a long time is that if you think a policy is wrong and you can't execute it, then you have a responsibility of saying something. It doesn't mean you step outside the chain of command. We have civilian authority in the United States of America for good reasons. But if you're, you know, a top general, like, for example, you'll see, you know, Austin Scotty Miller, who was the last American general for this failed war effort in Afghanistan. You can see now that based on various press reports that he had various misgivings or criticisms of the policies under both Trump and then Biden. Well, the thing is, you know, General, you're in charge of the war. If you think this is a losing effort, you think this is doomed to fail, which is what we were saying, then you can resign. You can go do something else with your life. You can resign and protest. You can stand up for what you think is right. But he didn't do that. In fact, you basically have a lot of this, you know, basically trying to cover their bases now after the fact and trying to pretend like that they don't own this policy when in fact they do. So in other words, John, I'm sure there were more dissents that I'm not even aware of from NATO, from within the U.S. military, from others. But they didn't really, first of all, they didn't have the type of clarity to make that dissent stick. And second of all, they didn't make it public. They didn't really actually do what they should have done to stand up for what they thought was right.
Now we come to the money. Follow the money. This is Reuters reporting in these last days. Donors to the World Bank administered Afghanistan Reconstruction Trust Fund, ARTF, have agreed to decide about a transfer of funds to humanitarian aid agencies by December 10th, a World Bank spokesperson said. The World Bank's board this week backed transferring $280 million from the $1.5 billion trust fund, which was frozen after the Taliban took over the Afghan government in August, to the World Food Program and UNICEF, Reuters reported on Wednesday. It appears that the transnational organization, the World Bank, and World Food Program at the UN and UNICEF are looking to find a way to put aid, chiefly food, into a country that is now widely reported as not on the edge of starvation, but actually plunging into starvation. There's an estimate from the New York Times, nearly 4 months since the Taliban seized power, Afghanistan is on the brink that of mass starvation that aid groups say threatened to kill a million children this winter. So, Tom, I believe what we have here is an effort for the Taliban to find money in some fashion, even if it comes in the form of food aid. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm speaking with Tom Jossen of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. He's a senior fellow. We're talking about the few reports we have coming out of Afghanistan of a crisis that only grows larger during these winter months. When we come back, we're going to turn to the larger Islamist questions about Al-Qaeda in Syria and in Africa. This is John Batchelor.